Lesson 4 is going to be on the patriarchs, and let's start there at the top paragraph. He says, in our last lesson, we traced the history of man through the Bible. When we think about people today, you find that children, they're taught about the history of man. Evolution is typically one of the things that's emphasized. That's not the picture that we get in the Bible. God's the creator, used 6 literal days for creation, rested on the 7th day, and Adam and Eve were fully grown people, operating in an earth that was complete or mature. History of man through the Bible from the creation of the flood. We've looked at some of the events immediately following the flood. We talked about Noah a little bit, the sacrifices, the animals, the pairs of clean and unclean that he was told to take and so forth. Now we want to start looking at the patriarchs, the story of how their descendants become great people while slaves in Egypt. He does offer a couple of little charts. There at the bottom left, of course, he tries to divide things up for us, the patriarchal age. He says there was no written law, and that, of course, is significant. There was law. But law, does it need to be written to be law? No. Verbal law is going to be fine. And presumably that's what Adam and Eve were operating by. You know, when God said, thou shalt not eat, I'm not sure that that was a plaque stenciled, over there in the tree of life, which says, thou shalt not eat. But the verbal warning was enough. So Adam and Eve, sin comes into the world. Then you start getting into Noah, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and so forth. And then finally, the people of Israel, Egypt, Moses, Mount Sinai, the deliverance, Canaan, the times of the judges and kings and so forth, and ultimately you get into the prophets and then finally into the New Testament. Okay, he, finishing out this paragraph, says the period of creation all the way to the giving of the law, that is the law of Moses, we might define that as what kind of period or age? It is the patriarchal age, and patriarchal age simply means that the fathers were the spiritual leaders in the home. Always need spiritual leadership. God has provided different means for that. Under the Old Testament era, it was the fathers. As you look at Moses there, Moses certainly provided some leadership. He had some helpers. God made sure that some helpers were appointed for him. New Testament, of course, you also read about elders as far as spiritual leadership in local congregations. In the box, he rightly mentions the word patriarch simply means father. And as we look at the Old Testament, we have three fellows that are key patriarchs. Who are they? Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, he mentions this indirectly. I do want to make a couple of quick points about it. He says that, I think it's a little bit later in the lesson, but he makes the point a little, I want to make it more than he did, that when you look at Christianity and Judaism, do you have Abraham as a central figure? Yes. Yeah. I mean, for the Jewish people, Abraham was the go-to guy. And when you think about Abraham, Christianity, he is related to the Lord, and Christianity as well. Galatians 3, Paul talks about the seed, which is Christ, Abraham's seed. So Abraham there is certainly factoring in to a big part of that. But would you guess or suspect that religions other than Christianity have focus on Abraham? Oh, yeah. Can you think of at least one? All right. Islamic faith, Muslims, they would go back and they would have high regard for Abraham. Then there are a couple of others that you might not be familiar with. Anybody know about the Rastafarians? Anybody ever hear of them? Okay. Was it because of music?
A lot of it.
Okay. The Rastafarian music, that's from the Caribbean, from Jamaica. When I was doing some mission work down there way, way, way back when, I saw a Rastafarian. And this fellow was on the street corner. And Rastafarian is part of their religion. They use drugs. And this fellow was drugged up. I remember one of the locals telling me that the Rastafarian, not necessarily this one, it wouldn't have been this one, but he was so drugged up, so doped up, that he actually had a scorpion come up. Didn't know that a scorpion got on him and stung him and killed him. So Rastafarians is kind of an unusual religion, but they would go back and they would have some ties in their mind to Abraham. Anybody ever hear about the Baha'i faith? Okay, Steve, a couple others. I first came across that when I was in the military. The only lady that I've ever met that was a member of that religious group. But we were talking. She was telling me a little bit about that. The Baha'i faith is kind of, I think of it as a social faith. We want, let's eliminate poverty and let's do good to people and, let's have everybody get along, a real peaceful kind of religion. But it also would go back and have, it would lay claim to Abraham. So when we think about this fella, and he cuts a wide swath as far as human history and as far as religions that would claim any type of association to him. Anything you want to add or ask before we look at that next paragraph? Okay. He says a direct Abraham, he would be a direct descendant of Shem, that it would be one of Noah's sons. Abraham was born in Ur of Chaldees, the southern part of the present-day country of Iraq. When we look at where Iraq is, that part of the world, I don't know that I would say it with 100% certainty, but I'm about 99.999% certain that we can say that that's the cradle of civilization. When you think about where Adam and Eve were, that seems to be the place where everything started. And it's been a very interesting place as far as human history, the wars and the people who have come from there and the history that's taken place there. So it's a very old part of the world, and a lot of stuff has happened there. As we look at Abraham, or Abram, known first of all as Abram, the Bible looked upon him and saw him as a good man. Now, as I see that, a passage that comes to my mind, in fact, a couple of passages are found in the Old Testament. Let's go back and take a quick look at them. First one comes from 2 Chronicles chapter 16, verse 9. And the other one's going to come from the book of Zechariah chapter 4, verse 10. You'll have a minute to get there. Who wants to take 2 Chronicles 16, verse 9? All right, Steve. And then a little later we'll look at Zechariah 4, the 10th verse. Zechariah 4, verse 10. Who wants to take care of that one? Glenda? Zechariah 4, verse 10. And when you think about Abraham, it almost would seem like God's kind of looking down on the earth, seeing who's doing what, and what the mindsets of people are, and whether or not they're disposed to be righteous or unrighteous. And that's exactly what we find. Let's start off with that 2 Chronicles reference. Steve, 2 Chronicles 16, verse 9.
For the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth, to show himself strong on behalf of those whose heart is loyal to him. In this you have done foolishly, therefore from now on you shall have wars.
Okay, you think God really has eyes that are going around the world? No. But what's that a way of saying? God's eyes go to and fro the earth. What's that mean? Are he seeing everything? And who's he looking for? People who will be righteous. People who will live according to his precepts. As he looks at the world, based on today's lesson, who's he see? There's Abraham. He's a righteous man, and God says, I can work through him. Then, Glenda, if you're ready for that Zechariah 4, verse 10 reference. Very similar. Okay. Again, you have there the eyes of the Lord, not literally, but they're ranging, they're going through the whole earth, keeping watch over people, if you will, knowing what people are doing. And in this case, God looked at Abraham, and he makes several promises to him. God says, I want you to leave your people. I want you to go to a land that I'm going to show you. Now, that's tough for a lot of folks. There's some people that are not willing to move across town. But you imagine God saying, I want you to go to another country. And it's not, we're going to have U-Haul come in and load you up. The company's not going to pay for moving. This is something that you're going to have to do, and not the easiest thing to do at any time, certainly in Abraham's circumstances. And not only he says you're going to have to leave your country, you're also going to have to leave your family. Forget about family reunions. Forget about having the brother, the sister, the cousin, whoever it is, across the way. You're not going to see them week after week. So it was a big deal. But God says, if you do that, Genesis 12, verses 1 through 7, I'm going to make some promises to you. I'm going to make some great promises to you. I'm going to make of you a great nation. You think you're leaving behind your family? You think you're losing your ancestors? God says, no, you're going to have a great, great family. You're going to become the father of the Israelites. And not only am I going to give you descendants beyond really what you can count, he says, I'm also going to give you a great name. Well, remember what we said just a few moments ago? Who knows the name of Abraham? Jews, Muslims, Christians, the Baha'i faith, Rastafarians. So his name, even now, thousands of years later, still has worldwide recognition, and people look to him and honor him, which is the end of point two. And God says, in addition to the nation, in addition to the name, I'm also going to give you some land, some territory. Wow, that was a pretty great promise. And then God went on to say that I'm going to bless those who bless you, I'm going to curse those who curse you, and then even to the point where Israel's neighboring nations would be blessed or cursed, their fate would be determined by how the people treated the folks of Israel, Abraham's descendants. And then God said, ultimately, how many nations of the earth are going to be blessed? all. Can you imagine that? God says, I'm going to do, if you will obey me, I'm going to do something through you with your family that will bless every single nation on the earth. There are some great promises in the Bible, but this is about as great, this is about as big as it gets. So this is what was done, and he rightly mentions this was fulfilled in Christ. Is there anybody that needs a copy of the material? Okay. Yes? Yeah, okay. Then we have down there, he says, Abraham's descendant, that's Jesus. Anybody else? Was going to bless the whole world. And the chief reason the people of Israel were chosen by God was so that the Lord could come. Well, has the Lord come? Yeah. So, biblically, what happened to the nation of Israel as far as their great status before God? Are they now special?
No.
No. Who's special?
Everyone.
The people who are willing to follow Christ. So you could be from the nation of Israel, you could be from America, you could be from China, Australia, whatever continent you want to pick. If you are a follower of Christ, then you are one of Abraham's descendants, spiritually speaking. But a lot of people today don't get that. They think that the nation of Israel still has some great plan in God's system of things, and it's going to have this and that happen at the future time. That's just not what we find in the Scripture. But the nation of Israel was really a vehicle, and now Christ has come. Then that final little paragraph, in obedience to the divine call, Abraham goes to Canaan. You have there Genesis 12, verses 12 to 25. You have a lot of events from that time in his life. And then you have somebody else that kind of picks up in the story, a relative of Abraham. And who is that? Lot. All right. Abraham, we know that he was a righteous man. And the time comes where you've got the problem between the herdsmen of Abraham, Lot's herdsmen. So they decide to split. And what direction does Lot start to go? Heads towards Sodom. So, not inside the gate initially, but he just kind of points his tent in that direction. But as the Bible continues, it doesn't take very long. Where do you find Lot? He's gone from outside the city of Sodom, now to the inside section of Sodom. Got a house there, and things, as we remember from the biblical account, do not go all that well. Finally, he has to flee Sodom. His family is on the way out as well. And then, of course, what happens to Lot's wife? She turns into a pillar of salt, and Jesus said, remember Lot's wife. Okay, top of the second page, as we look at Abraham's family, and you can see down there in the bottom right that we've got some information about that. There's a little chart there, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Ishmael, Esau, and so forth, the children of Israel. Who is Abraham's oldest son? Ishmael. And the mom was Hagar. So you remember that Abraham went through that time, God makes the promises, Abraham's old, there is no child. So he's kind of thinking, well, God's made these promises. He's not delivered. So what should I do? Yeah, let's go out and see if we can kind of help God out a little bit. So I tried to have and did have a son through Hagar, the handmaid. But did God say that's okay? No, he said, in who will thy seed be called? In Isaac. So you are going to have a son with Sarah. And Abraham was old. I mean, he's 100 years old. Sarah is 90. They were both well past the childbearing years, and, in their minds, it was just almost a joke. But, God said, don't laugh. Be back around this time, about a year from now, and you are going to have a baby. Ishmael, as we look at him, family history, as far as the things, the way things turned out in human history, who came from him?
Arabs.
All right, we have the Arabs. And then, of course, you have virtually every race that you can go back and trace, as we mentioned, from the book of Joah, the book of Genesis, and we look at Noah. He then says, perhaps no greater example of faith can be found that when Abraham offered Isaac in sacrifice in response to God's command. Now, this is something we've mentioned briefly in some other classes. I do want to mention it today. Abraham goes out, puts Isaac on the altar, gets ready to take his life and sacrifice him. How old approximately was Isaac? Yeah. A lot of people have the idea, and I think probably even in some children's Bible class material, you're looking at a six-year-old child there on the altar, young boy. That's not what we get. Josephus was an historian, and some of the stuff that he writes is very helpful. Some of the stuff he greatly exaggerated on. But his take is interesting. He puts the age of Isaac at 25. Now, I'm not quite sure where he got that, but you're looking at either a teenager by the time that event happens with Isaac, maybe someone who is in his early 20s. And that puts a whole new spin on the story. You know, you start thinking about the conversation that took place between the two. Abraham had some faith, but I think Isaac probably had a little faith too at that age. I mean, for a 5 or 6 year old, okay, they might not be clued in, but by the time he hit 15, 16, 17, you know, somebody's got you strapped to the altar, you've got a pretty good idea what's going on.
He was also obedient to his father.
Yes, yeah. And, you know, Abraham said, God's going to provide. So it'd be very interesting if you could kind of pull back what was going through the minds of those people, Abraham and Isaac, but it was an amazing event. So just kind of scrap that idea if you've grown up with him being 5 or 6. Glenda?
Where do you get to be 17?
You have to go back and kind of, you know, look at things. Well, don't take 17 as an official age. But as you kind of go back and you look at the ages that we have, 5 or 6 just doesn't match up very well. So,
part of it, you have a range. He can't be older than 37, because he's 37 when Sarah dies.
Yeah.
We know she's not dead yet. And he's old enough to have this conversation with his dad. But that's sort of the bounds of it, I think.
Yeah.
Somewhere in there. I don't know where 17 would come from either.
Yeah. So, well, I think that was the number that Bonnie threw out as an approximation. So, she didn't pull that out from a specific passage, but teenager, possibly into the early 20s. So very interesting that he was not, as some pictures describe it, in those real early years. All right, the Lord saw the faith of Abraham. Abraham's hand was stayed, and of course Isaac's life was preserved. Offering is made available, and that's offered. The story in Genesis chapter 22, and then at age 175 years of age, Abraham dies and is buried in the cave of Machpelah right there with Sarah. All right, Abraham's out of the picture now. Attention is then turned to Isaac. He lives to be about the same age as his dad, lives to the age of 180, 5 years later. And then, of course, God has made all those promises to Abraham. But you might be wondering, if dad was promised all that stuff, what about me? I mean, I'm the one that is the son, so how are things going to work out? So God appears to Isaac, and again, those promises are repeated. Who's Isaac marrying?
Rebecca.
All right, marries a cousin, Rebecca, and then of course we have a couple more key Bible characters introduced, Jacob and Esau, and then Jacob is going to be the one that is the one who is the recipient of the promises. Then we get down to Jacob, the third fella. He is at a later time renamed Israel, gets that new name from God. So we draw from that the children of Israel, the children of Jacob. As there are a lot of interesting things about these fellows as well. Esau, as we look at his life, what happens with him in the birthright? He sells it. In Hebrews chapter 12, verses 15 through 17, that's presented as an evil act. It was a thoughtless act. It would be, well, I don't know how to compare it today, but here's something that a person has. It is, as, you know, it would be like, you know, saying, well, here's my salvation. Here's the deed to my soul, if you will. I'm hungry. Give me some chicken soup. Now, it wasn't quite that drastic, but you just can't imagine anybody doing that. Because here we're talking about a blessing that was somewhat spiritual, but it wasn't necessarily the salvation of the soul. The Hebrew writer refers to him as a profane person. And after he gave that away, after he sold the blessing for that meal, did he regret it? Yes. The Bible says in Hebrews chapter 12 that he sought it with tears. He was willing to do things like beg for it, but it was not returned. Then you also have some deception at various times. He deceived his father to get the blessing that belonged to his brother, Genesis chapter 27. Then finally, Jacob has to flee to Haran, and there, who's he meet? Rachel. He wants her, and what's the bridal price? She should have been a pretty good wife. Have to work 7 years for her, but how did things work out? All right, he was tricked, and what was the trick? He got another woman instead, and we joked about that one time at a preacher's meeting. It says that she has a weak eye, and they joked that that might have been a twitch, and they called her the twitcher. Well, I'm not sure that it was a twitch, but she was not quite the one that he wanted. So after Laban's dirty deal has been made clear, what happens? All right, he gets the other one, but he's got to work 14 years and ends up with two women, the one that he didn't intend to have. So that's going to come from Genesis 28 and 29. Then you've got Jacob, several sons, a daughter, Diana, and then you have the 12 tribes of Israel, which again you'll see that in the bottom chart. Then he has here the information about Joseph, and if you've got a sheet, most do I think, we're going to take a look at that in just a minute. But Joseph, he becomes a favorite son. He's one of the few important Bible characters, the writer says, of whom nothing evil is said. His brothers become jealous. Joseph, I think, remember the story. He was sold into slavery. Where does he end up finally? All right, ends up in Egypt. What happens to him? Well, was there a detail or two before that? All right, he's accused of, making advances, ends up in prison, and then what happens? All right, he's brought out of the dungeon, cleaned up, becomes the second in command over Egypt, and then after some time passes, what occurs in Egypt? All right, we've got the famine. It's really bad in all the land. It's so bad that who decides that we've got to go to Egypt and get some food? All right, Joseph's family, they decide that they've got to come down. Joseph recognizes his brethren. They don't recognize him. He puts them in a little bit of a bind, and they get some concern. And then finally, what happens? Brings them all down to Egypt. They end up living where?
Goshen.
Very good. I was hoping somebody would remember that. They end up out there in the land of Goshen. It was a good land. And then about 400 years pass. And what finally happens?
Another Pharaoh
would not like. Well, okay. Yeah, you know, we get into the situation where their captives are not treated very well. And then after that, what occurs? They're finally released. And then we get into the other things that we mentioned earlier. The conquest of Canaan, the judges and so forth, the kings. And Bible history continues to unfold. So it really is an amazing story. He says the story of the reunion, this is at the bottom of that page, the story of the reunion of the brothers is one of the most touching that can be read. Now, if all we know are the basic details of that story, that's good. But I prepared a sheet for you that if you will, in just a little bit, go through this with me, I think that you'll see from the story of Joseph that there is a lot more going on than just this fella. And he's got some brothers that don't like him. There's some promises that are made and Egypt, and finally everybody gets out and so forth. There's a ton of more stuff going on. A week ago Wednesday, in the Bible class here, we went through predictive prophecy related to Jesus, and I said, this is one of the things that you can use to sit down with a person and show, why do I believe the Bible? You know, it's not just because the preacher says it's true, it's not just because my parents thought it was true, but here are things that were predicted years in advance, and here is the fulfillment of them. With characters like Joseph, and this is just one character, but you, as you look at this fella, can find at least 60 points of comparison between Joseph and Christ. And we're going to deal with that in just a minute. But like I say, for now, he calls it a beautiful story, which is true. And that is probably the best way to sum this up for the Bible lesson. But there is a whole lot more going on here than what I think people may normally associate with it. So hopefully this sheet is going to be something as well that you can talk to people about and help them see just how marvelous the Bible is. The Egyptian bondage, top of the next page. After the death of Jacob and Joseph, the children of Israel, they multiplied. They so increased that after they left Egypt, 430 years later, Exodus 12, verse 40, they went from about how many? They went from about 70 people to how many men? 600,000 men plus women and children. So when it was time for them to leave, there surely was over 1 million, maybe close to 2 million people. In the meantime, and this is what Glenda had mentioned, there was another Pharaoh who knew not Joseph. Now, do you think that it may be literally true he knew not Joseph? Possible. But more than likely, the key part of that expression is what? He knew not Joseph. He no longer... All right, you've kind of had your time. Israel has passed, and we're not going to give you and your people special treatment anymore. So now that, we're back to good times, prosperous times, what are we going to do? Time to put you under the thumb. We're going to put you in slavery. So... things can happen very quickly, sometimes in a matter of 20, 30, 50 years, certainly within a few hundred years. There can be massive changes in history. God raised up a deliverer. That, of course, was Moses. That would seem to be an unlikely candidate for a lot of reasons, but God uses unusual people in unusual ways. The story of Moses is also a great story. There's, in his life, a lot of things, I think, beyond what people may think about. And he says, you know, going back to the early years, placed in an ark as a baby by his parents. They thought that he was going to be killed, but they did that by faith. King's daughter ends up with him, raises him as a prince. He's willing to give up his royal home, trying to help his people. There, of course, was the death, you know, that caused him to flee Egypt. And then God appears to him. You've got the burning bush. He comes back. And then Aaron gives him some help. They begin to get the people out of Egypt and start to lead them in the wilderness. Moses and his brother Aaron, who became his spokesman, they made multiple trips to Pharaoh to try to persuade this ruler to let the Israelites leave bondage. King didn't want to do that, so God said, okay, I'm going to show you my power. Pharaoh, you think you're powerful? You think that you have gods that can go ahead and withstand me? God says, here we go. One, two, three. How many times did it take? He got whacked 10 times, and finally the 10th plague was the death of the firstborn in Egypt, and that was sufficient for Pharaoh to finally say, go, get out. For the complete story, he says to the patriarchs, Genesis 12 through Exodus chapter 12, and then you have Israel in the wilderness. Okay, let's go through our questions, and then we're going to go through that sheet on Joseph. He was born in Ur of Chaldees. It was going to be Abraham. Who was renamed Israel by God? Jacob. He lived to be 180. Isaac. How long did Abraham live? Very good. His wife was Sarah. Abraham. He had a daughter by the name of Diana. Okay, Jacob. All right, thank you. Number 6, his twin brother's name was Esau. That was going to be Jacob. He proved his faith in God by offering his son as a sacrifice. Abraham. Who married Rebekah? Isaac. Who worked for 7 years and got the wrong wife? Jacob. Not because he wanted that, but Laban was trickery. He tried to save Sodom because his nephew Lot was there. Abraham. Okay, then let's fill in the blanks. God says, talking to Abraham from Genesis chapter 12, I'm going to make of you a great nation. I'm going to bless thee. And I'm going to make your what name? Your what great? Yeah, that's always good where you give the answer and then... All right, I'm going to make your name great. And I will bless them that bless thee and curse him that curses thee. And from thee, who's going to be helped? All families of the earth are going to be blessed. And the Lord appeared unto Abraham and said, unto thy seed, unto thy family, thy descendants, I will give this land. And what did he do? He built an altar unto the Lord who appeared unto him. The 12 sons of Jacob are named in Genesis chapter 49, 3 through 27. Who do we have listed?
Reuben.
Okay. Levi, Judah, Zebulun, Dan, Gad, Asher,
Naphtali, Joseph, Benjamin.
All right, Naphtali, Joseph, and Benjamin. So hopefully you got those. They should have been fairly easy to get. Then let's put the right letter with the right question. The mother of Isaac was who?
Sarah.
Patriarch means mom, brother, or father?
Father.
The twin sons of Isaac were Cain and Abel, Jacob and Esau, Sodom and Gomorrah. All right. I hope we got that one right. Then let's look at number 4. After Jacob served 7 years to gain Rachel as a wife, he married both Leah and Rachel. The number of additional years he served, all right, it was going to be another 7. And then question number 5. Jacob's favorite son was going to be Joseph. And again, we're going to talk about him because he is such a special Bible character. The man who interpreted Pharaoh's dream was Joseph. Helped him, be appointed to the great position he had. The number of years the children of Israel were in Egypt were how many? 430, Exodus chapter 12. So sometimes you round that down. Bible does the same thing, but four centuries. Point 8, Moses was raised in the home of? All right, Pharaoh's daughter. The man who became the spokesman for Moses was Aaron. Moses claimed that he didn't speak so well. That doesn't seem to be, quite as accurate as Moses claimed. He probably just felt somewhat deficient. The last plague to come upon Egypt was it was going to be the death of the firstborn, All right, everybody has a copy of the sheet about Joseph? Okay. Is there somebody that's got an extra? Okay. Now, I broke this material. It didn't come from me, as you'll see at the bottom. I gleaned it from Pink, and he suggests that there are 60 comparisons between Jesus and Joseph. There may be more. I like these 45, and when you start looking at these, and remember, this is just one Bible character. Joseph was used to point forward to Jesus in more than 40 ways, maybe more than 50. And to sit down with somebody, even a young person, to say, you know, you've reached the teenage years, let's talk about the Bible. I want to study with you tonight Joseph, and let's see how he points to the Lord. I don't see how anybody can go away from the comparisons and say the Bible is an unbelievable book. Was Jesus a shepherd? All right, he's the great shepherd, John 10, verse 11. What about Joseph? He also was a shepherd, Genesis 37, verse 2. Joseph was exposed to evil. That statement is made in Genesis 37, verse 2. Was the Lord exposed to evil? Absolutely. Number three, we have already talked about this in the lesson. Was Joseph loved by his father?
Yes.
Yeah, loved so much that he received what? Well, favoritism, and what was it demonstrated by? He got the coat of many colors, and that didn't go over so well with his brethren. Was Jesus loved by the Father? Oh, yeah. Many times that statement is made. So you can relate that back to Joseph. Was Joseph hated by his brothers? Oh, yes. Cast into that pit. Then sold. Was Jesus hated by his brothers? Uh-huh. Joseph was hated for his words, Genesis 37, verse 8. Jesus spoke the truth, and he was hated for what he said. Was Joseph promised a remarkable future? You know, he gives that information about the vision he'd received. It didn't look too good. The Lord looked past the cross to the joy that was set before him, a remarkable future as well. Joseph, did he foretell his rule?
Yes,
he did. And, you know, the father asked, you know, are you saying what I think you're saying? Jesus did the same thing. He promised that he was going to have rule. Was Joseph envied by his brothers? Absolutely. And that specific statement is made about the Lord, Matthew 27, verses 17 and 18. Did Joseph seek the welfare of his brothers? Absolutely. What about the Lord? He came to seek the welfare of all people. He came to save instead of condemn. Joseph was conspired against, Genesis 37, 18, and that was also true for the Lord, Matthew 12, verse 14. Did Joseph's brothers believe his dreams? No. You know, here's the dreamer that's coming, they said. And you have people, as you look at Jesus' life, his brethren did not believe him. That would be true for his physical brethren as well as the Jewish people. Was Joseph stripped of his coat? Yeah. Now, you read that detail, and you may not think anything more about it. You think, okay, yeah, well, that's just interesting. No, God put that there for a reason. When you look at Jesus, what happened to him? Also stripped of his coat. Now, some of these are generic, and you might say, well, you know, but put them together. And then you have to step back and say, wow. Was Joseph cast into a pit? Yeah. Where was Jesus put? Into a grave. Joseph was taken out of the pit while he was still alive. What's Jesus? In the tomb, he comes. He's raised from the dead, comes forth in the resurrection. Jesus faced things like hypocrisy and hatred, just like Joseph's brothers did to him. How much was Joseph sold for? Well, that was, it's the price of the slave, Genesis 37, verse 28. Jesus was sold for that same amount. You have to think, well, now, is that just a great coincidence or something else going on here? Judas suggested selling Jesus. This morning, I'm just not seeing right. Judas suggested selling Joseph, Genesis 37, 26, 28. And then, as I note, Matthew 1, especially verse 2, but it's also in verse 3, Judas is the Greek name for Judah. So it's kind of interesting that of all the brothers that could have made that suggestion, it was this one, and then we read about Judas in the New Testament. From Genesis chapter 39, Joseph, did he become a servant? Yeah. Sold off into Egypt, and there in Potiphar's house, did Jesus come as a servant? Yes, that's a big point in Philippians chapter 2. Joseph's master, was he well pleased with him? Absolutely. And Jesus always pleased the Father. Did Joseph become a blessing to others? Yes, he did. With what he did, the coming famine and so forth, Jesus blesses the world, Acts 3, 25 and 26. Was Joseph greatly tempted? Yeah. Now people look at that story, you know, Potiphar's wife, and they kind of wonder, well, you know, that's a neat story. Yeah, it is, but it's pointing forward to something. There was going to be someone else, the counterpart to Joseph, who was going to be tempted in every possible way and like Joseph, not sin. Was Joseph falsely accused? Yeah. Was the Lord? Absolutely. Joseph, from what we read in Genesis 39, did not attempt any defense. And then as we look at Jesus, his trials, even prophecy, Isaiah chapter 53, verse 7, he gave no defense. In spite of being innocent, what happened to Joseph? He's cast into prison. Jesus, in spite of being innocent, what happens to him? All right, he's put on the cross. He's sentenced to death. When you look at Joseph, Did he suffer, if you will, from something like Jews and Gentiles? Suffers from his own family first, his own brothers. And then he's put into the hands of Gentiles, non-family members. Well, interesting. Why record that detail? In the Bible, Jesus experienced the same thing. He suffered at the hands of his brothers, the Jews. And then he also suffered from the hands of Gentiles. Psalm 105, verses 17 through 18, not a passage that we normally look at with Joseph, but he is mentioned there. His sufferings were great. When we think about the Lord, his sufferings were also great. Did Joseph win the respect of the jailer? Yeah. Now, that's, again, a detail. You look at that and you think, well, okay, that's a neat part of the story. No, something else is going on there. It's one more detail that points forward to Christ. Remember Jesus on the cross? Who's the fellow who says, truly, this was the Son of God? All right, he's the Roman centurion, Luke 23, verse 47. And then you not only have things that point to Christ in Genesis 37, 38, and Genesis 39, but also in Genesis 40. Joseph was numbered with transgressors, wasn't he? Down there in the prison cell. What's said about Jesus? Numbered with transgressors. Joseph wanted to be remembered by the butler. With Christ, do we also have a memorial? The Lord's Supper. Do this in remembrance of me. And then in Genesis chapter 41, Joseph was put in prison, entombed there, if you will. Did he stay there? No. And the Lord didn't let Jesus remain in the tomb. Another thing that you look at the text and you kind of think, well, you know, what's going on there? Joseph changed his clothes before he comes to the ruler of Egypt. Now we'd say, well, that makes sense. You know, you're down there in the prison, you're scummy, you're dirty, you smell bad. Before you're going to go before the president or the king, you change your clothes. But there was more going on there than what we might think. Jesus changed his clothes. You have there the things left in the tomb, John 20, verses 6 and 7. Joseph was able to reveal divine things. Remember the dreams that Pharaoh had, and Joseph interprets those, Genesis 41, 15 to 32. Jesus claimed to do the same kind of thing, only in a greater scale. Did Joseph warn that danger was coming? Famine's going to show up. You need to be prepared. Has Jesus issued some warnings? Yes, but it's not just a famine. It's going to be his next and final coming, plus some other things. Joseph was a wonderful counselor to Pharaoh, so he's exalted. Compare Colossians 2:3. Jesus, all the wisdom, all the treasures of knowledge are hidden in him. The Lord was exalted. We know that Joseph was exalted and set over Egypt. Joseph was seated on the throne of another. Now, as we're reading there in the book of Genesis, we might think, well, okay, that just makes sense to me. Well, it does, but that was pointing forward to something else. Over there in Revelation chapter 3, verse 21, Jesus says, I sat down with my Father on the throne. Pointing forward to Christ, but a lot of people just never make that connection. Joseph's authority and glory, were they publicly displayed? Yeah. I mean, you've got Pharaoh going all out to say, this is the number two in the land. Makes that very clear. Well, that happened to Jesus. Peter makes that point on the day of Pentecost in Acts chapter 2. He's been raised up, highly exalted. God has glorified him. Did Joseph receive a new name from Pharaoh? Genesis 41, verse 45 says he does. Did. And then when we think about Jesus, what do we find? Given a name above every name. Now, when you look at that in the New Testament, you might not think about Joseph. When you look at that in Joseph's life, you might not think about it from the New Testament perspective. But that is there. And then this. Somebody says, well, you know, all these things are interesting. Almost convinced. Can you offer some more? Sure. Point 39. Joseph was how old? 30 years old when he began to help preserve the lives of people. Remember the life of Christ? The Lord was about 30 when he began his ministry. Well, isn't that interesting? Is it just an idle coincidence? Why mention that specific detail back there in Genesis 41, verse 46? And then after Genesis 37, 38, 39, 40, and 41. Why did I do 41 twice? That's an error. I'm going to have to fix that. Joseph's exaltation was followed by a season of plenty. Spiritually now, Paul says there's the fullness of the Gentiles. Joseph dispensed bread to a perishing world. What's Jesus? He is the bread of life. Again, you have to look at that and you say, wow. Joseph was a savior to many. Such is true of Jesus as well, only on a grander scale. Joseph was unknown and unrecognized by his brethren. You have that story in Genesis chapter 42. There's my 42. So I should have had 41 once in chapter 42. So I apologize for that error. Then you have point 44, Joseph was thought to be dead. Genesis 42, verse 2, such was true of Jesus. Joseph, did he punish his brethren? Did he keep them on the hot seat for a little while? Yeah, he did. And Jesus, as you look at his brethren, if you will, the destruction of Jerusalem, they also were on the hot seat.